Yes, g'day everyone. Welcome to the Tripod Live with Winnie and Clarky. Great to have you in our company for this live show. We'll be here to recap everything we just seen from round 18 before we get to all that more. Winnie, a crazy round of footy, a really crazy round of footy. How are you going, mate, and how did we go with our best bets this round?
Yeah, I'm pretty frustrated. This week, just kind of like last week, go back to last week, I feel like I had bets on three games and I only got one right and two wrong. So to get out of last week, 1-2 and winning the mixed matchup was a good result. With this round, I had bets on three games. I feel like I got at least two of them right, if not all three right. We'll get to it. But we're out of there with a 1-2, same as last week. And we win the mixed matchup. It doesn't feel nearly as sweet when you win the mixed matchup by 50 points or whatever it was, because you feel like, and same with our Cowboys best bet where we win each half by 30 plus points. But we can't seem to win the tight ones. But that's how it goes. We did win your take on Toppy Montoya scoring the first and only try for the Warriors. No luck on the same game multi. But it was a weird round, wasn't it? Five out of the eight games, total blowouts. So plenty to discuss in terms of what we picked up.
Yeah, other blowouts back. I guess my first takeaway from a best bets perspective anyway is that you've been so keen on the Knights. I know how keen you've been on for so many games this year and our preseason preview. And of course, the one game that they just absolutely explode in. I don't believe we had a best bet on that one, did we?
No, and to be fair, I was more inclined to the Bulldogs. So I want to talk about how pitiful Canterbury was in that game. But the thought did cross my mind, geez, if the Knights could have been anywhere near as clinical with their execution in games where it mattered, they might have won a couple of the close ones, which would count for a lot more in the ladder than just saving it all for one game.
Absolutely spot on. Of course, we are live. So to anyone who is here live with us, feel free to chat, get involved throughout the show. We've got Colt here on YouTube. G'day, Colt. How are you going, mate? And with that said, Winnie, let's jump into the action this round. We kicked it off on Thursday night where the Sharkies defeated the Dragons 52-16. I went with Nico Hines for my MVP in this one. Three tries, sis. I mean, everyone was kind of predicting this. And I suspect most fans that went at this game probably weren't too interested in the line. They were probably more interested in Sharks 13+ and just throwing tips at a dartboard for any time try scorers. And I'm guessing a lot of people won too, because all the ones that you'd like for value, Nikora got over, Mulatalo, the classics, Hines, etc.
But yeah, Ramian.
Anyone you know,
everyone except Katoa, the right winger.
Yeah.
And so I wonder how many that could have foiled some same gamers, but I saw plenty triple digit odds same gamers get up Thursday night. It was a punter's dream, probably, other than one winger missing out.
And this game really reminded me of the COVID season where we started to have those blowout scores from the six again, and you could kind of pick a favorite, and then from there it's just literally take your pick at some try scores and you're a chance. This game had vibes to that before. It's exactly how it played out for the Dragons. The only real positive I found was quite literally their first 5 minutes. I thought they started brilliantly. Their defense in that first set was awesome, and they were rewarded with it 1 minute later with a try. And when that happened, I thought, okay, you know, I've gone out and said Sharks will cover that line now. Immediately, I'm behind the eight ball here badly. But, you know, over the 80 minutes, the Sharks just wound them down. That's what they do. They do that against top bottom eight sides, rather. Dragons possession stat of 39%. That's personally the lowest I think I've ever seen in an NRL game. Usually, if you have a bad game, your possession's like 45%. 39% is extremely low. But yeah, not much to take out of this one other than the Sharks are still very good against bottom eight competition, and they've still got a bit to prove when it comes to the top dogs. How did you see this one? Anything else you'd like to add?
We shouldn't be surprised, should we? The biggest line of the weekend and the Sharks' known bullies. And as we said, they're off a bye as well. So they're fit and fresh, rested going into this. I just held out some hope that the Dragons at home could put up a fight, you know, in a derby game. And as you say, they score first and you think, is there something about the Dragons tonight? But not really. They couldn't hang in the contest there. And the Sharkies ultimately just ground them down and had a bit of a night out. So I want to reply to Rogers' comment there, which is, you know, a question about the blowout. So Rogers says, are the blowout scores a result of season fatigue and injuries? Are we seeing now squads do not have the depth to cover injuries? So it's interesting because if you look at this round, you have the three biggest blowouts of the round were the three bottom teams on the ladder. So the Dragons, the Tigers, and the Bulldogs all copping it. So that is somewhat predictable. Maybe we are at that stage of the ladder where they know they're not going to play, you know, many more meaningful games. I know they're not playing finals footy. In a couple of those games, those teams had the bye. You expect an improvement. But if a team goes into a bye knowing the season's already over, maybe they're not really that keen on getting back and getting stuck in. So some truth to that, I think, that the teams that are lacking motivation, the holes will really, you know, open up. But then a couple of teams that got blown out this weekend were the Warriors and the Storm at home. So, you know, these are teams with everything to play for. And the only thing I can say about those games, and we'll get into them, is maybe the Warriors and Storm lost to this year's grand finalists, for all we know, in Penrith and South. Maybe that's why they were blown out, just because of the class of the opposition. So it's hard to read into this one other than it's very hard to trust these teams that might not have much more to play for later in the year. Even if the line is big, as it was in this game, it's not enough points if they won't fight for 80 minutes.
You know, my friends gave it to me this week with a bit of banter when he, unrelated to this topic, but it was about whenever I'm on podcasts, I'm always searching up the facts while the other person's speaking. I've done it whilst you were speaking there again, so charge me guilty there. Grade 3 offense. But between rounds 17 to 20 last year, there was 5 blowout games in that time. That's a sample of 3 rounds. I think we had about 5 this round. So I think that question from Roger certainly has merit based on what we're seeing in regards to that. So great question there, Roger. And yeah, I guess we'll see how it plays out as we go on from this. But yeah, this next game was unexpected again. You'd say this was a blowout realistically. Warriors v Rabbitohs. Rabbitohs win 28-6. Didn't have a strong MVP in this one, but Cam Murray did have a try and the most tackles of anyone on his team, potentially pressing his case for the lock jersey there for the New South Wales Blues. But this is another game where the eventual loser started quite well. The Warriors started well in this one, just like the Dragons did, and just fell away. And I've got a note here regarding the Warriors and wet weather footy. I go back to their game against the Roosters. Now, it was only a 14-point loss. Not so bad, but they didn't look like scoring in the wet. And realistically, you could probably say the same about this game once that rain set in. You know, the dew was all over the ball, et cetera, et cetera. Really important win for the Rabbitohs in the context of their season. And when I say that, I mean the ladder is so tight, and the Bunnies do seem to be a genuine title contender, but you must finish in the top 4, as history shows us. You need to have that second chance. So really, really important for the Bunnies there. And I will say their 92% completion rate was really impressive given the conditions and given the fact this was in New Zealand. Warriors only missed 16 tackles all game, where the Souths missed 28. So although the scoreline does suggest a bit of a blowout, only 16 missed tackles, that's really low for that sort of score. But they did have 13 errors to the Bunnies, who only had 3. And that's where they shot themselves in the foot and didn't quite give them the best opportunity to go on with this one. How did you see this one?
And I saw this as one of the most impressive wins of the season by any team. And going into it, you know, I already thought it was a really good position for the Warriors to succeed. They're flying 4 from 5 wins, and you got Souths coming in, short turnaround, got to play a Friday night game, obviously, in New Zealand. We know there's no Latrell. I had question marks on Murray, but he had a really big game. My only question marks was his, you know, his health. I know what a star player he is. Then a day before the game, the Rabbitohs have lost Isaiah Tass and Campbell Graham as well. And they come into this game and cop the first 6 penalties of the game. And you don't see that many penalties these days because of the 6-again ruling. So to cop 6 straight penalties was ridiculous. I heard people complaining about referee calls, because I do feel like it swung back around, a few went against New Zealand lately, but I don't think they can have any complaints. It was pouring rain, to your point that New Zealand struggled in the rain, which doesn't really make sense because they should be as familiar with those conditions as anybody. It's their home conditions. And New Zealand gets the opening try, and I'm looking at this going, geez, this has a blowout written all over it. But I thought it was going to be at the hands of the home team. And for the Bunnies to just grit in there was so impressive. And I remember thinking during the game, if the Bunnies can actually win this game, it will be so damn impressive. And it will really show that that's a squad that believes they can win the comp, because so few teams would come in under these conditions with so many key personnel out and get a result here. And in the end, the Bunnies not only hung in and then were able to get their nose in front and then hang on to that lead and turn New Zealand away. And I do sometimes think errors can be forced when there's a lot of defensive pressure. And then the Bunnies extend that lead late, and it ends up being 5 straight tries to end the game and what you would essentially call a blowout win by South Sydney. And I thought, you know, in really torrential rain conditions, Souths were just confident enough to shift the ball a little bit. It wasn't all one out from the ruck, predictable. They were just willing to spread it, and then beautiful kicking game, particularly by Cody Walker, to get kicks in behind the Warriors line, get them turning around, and then backing it up with defense and kick chase. So it was outstanding by the Rabbitohs. You know, you would say, again, and I know I think I've been guilty of like picking when New Zealand are up for big games this year, because they've had some of their best wins when I doubted them. And then games where I thought New Zealand should be too good, that has been where they've failed. So, but I don't think it's just me. I think they've been hard to predict. I thought everything was set up for the Warriors to succeed here, but they were just beaten by a side who I said a few minutes ago, you know, they're still my premiership prediction. And you see why, to come in and win a game in those conditions, a bit undermanned as well. So impressive.
And I just think, I go back to my predict, the Rabbitohs tack would be too one-dimensional. Can you imagine when you add Latrell Mitchell back into this, when we hit finals and he's got 6 weeks fitness under his belt again? Campbell Graham, you mentioned him out for this game, also officially out for the Blues in game three. I thought he was definitely in line to finally make his debut. I'm interested to watch the Sharkies next week, because the Warriors had the huge win over the Dragons and then they didn't back it up. Maybe we were too high on them from that win. So I'd be interested. I'm not sure if they have the bye actually, but whoever the Sharkies do play next, I'll be interested to see that. And this one really hurt my Dally M prediction. Final point there, Winnie. I was really backing Sean Johnson to have some huge games back in New Zealand. Not sure he'd even get a point in this one. So that's unfortunate there. We closed it. Well, actually, I did see some betting ones in there. Anything you wanted to respond to there from Harry?
See a couple of comments, which I thought they're about my best bet. So I thought that ties into this next game where I did have a best bet. I can happy to, you know, respond to people's feedback on the results.
Perfect. We'll jump into the game. Storm v Panthers. Panthers win 24-16. Went with Isaac Tongo for my MVP. 13 tackle breaks, 2 tries and a try assist. Remarkable that this guy's still so young. He played back row in New South Wales Cup. He's an amazing center. Panthers have a really, really, really great center there in Tongo. And unlike Stephen Crichton, they've got to hold on to this guy. They've got to start thinking long-term, I think. Super long-term. He seems like a player that could be there for the next 10 years. But again, another game that started well for the eventual loser. If you were on the Storm here, you were starting to feel good. First try, great by Grant. Second try from Naz, Nelson Asofa Solomona. Probably a little bit lucky, I would say. But from that point, it didn't matter because that didn't influence the result. They fell apart. The completion rate of 68% is their lowest since they versed the Titans in round 3 this year. And we saw how diabolical they were up in that really hot 3 p.m. Saturday Arvo game on the Gold Coast. But they also missed 48 tackles. They had 12 errors, 6 penalties and 5 ruck infringements. And those stats just tell me, when I know people say stats aren't everything in footy, but this shows me that it does not matter who you are. If the Penrith Panthers had stats like that and they were versing the Bulldogs might win. You can't have those just disgusting stats on the record there. It goes to show, no matter who you are in the NRL, it doesn't matter if you're the Melbourne Storm in Melbourne, you will lose if you don't get those simple areas right. They didn't get them right. On the other hand, I've got an interesting question for you. So let's say finals start next week. Right now, finals are on. Do the Panthers still open as favourites, even though we know Nathan Cleary is unavailable, in your mind?
Well, are you giving everybody else all their key players? Like, is Latrell?
It literally starts next week.
Well, so it starts next week. Exactly how it is now. Yes, Penrith and Brisbane would be second favourite, I think, getting back on track this week. But you're right. Like, how much that says about Penrith, that they're missing, you know, maybe the most influential player in the competition, and they're still this good. And I do want to talk about the victors, of course, but let's circle back. I had a best bet on this game, went under 39.5. My first pure total best bet of the season. And I don't play many of these. And I feel like it's hard to ever have the same amount of confidence in a total as I might just behind a side where I think there's an advantage. But I just really felt there's a lot of ingredients for an under in this game. And I do recall last year, every time I just said I lean to a total, that won. And I just felt like I should have played it. So look, no regret going into this, giving it out as an under. If there's one critique in terms of just the total, I did start to think, did I really factor in not only as an AFL ground, but a roof that they're able to shut? But then they did say that the roof was open most of the day and there was some rain allowed in and, it was a bit slippery and there were errors. You talk about the eventual loser looking good in this. Well, that was also me, because I was looking good with my unders bet when there's no try for 15 minutes. Now, you tell me this season how many tries have been scored as a direct result of a charge down. You know, it's not many in a whole season, but did it happen in this game when I'm on unders? Sure did. And then is there another try? You know, 10, 15 minutes later, we're still fine. Two tries in the first 25 minutes. It's not a try. And the commentators are saying, well, a bit controversial. Well, not controversial, just a wrong call. So I think we've got it there. Nelson, do you want to say I don't know about double movement as much as just he lost the ball. Like if it happened anywhere else in the field, it would just be called a knock on. And we get to look at it 10 times in slow motion. We all see that. We give it a try. You know, so that hurts. But then what also hurts me is that this Melbourne Storm side that's been ruthless the last 3 weeks gave Cronulla nothing, held them to 10 points. Gave the Tigers nothing, held them to 6. Gave Manly nothing, held them to 6, right? Somehow then So yeah, you've let in four tries in 3 weeks, lets in three tries in 8 minutes to the Panthers. Of course, there's a penalty try. If I'm on an unders, there's going to be, you know, a penalty try. I knew the bunker would give Penrith maybe a sketchy one because they knew they'd stuffed up the other one, but it's not good for unders better because you get screwed twice. Anyway, I get it. Like maybe it was a penalty try, but then for the Storm to give up another, and then the cherry on top was to give up a try from a bomb that goes up the final play of the first half that ricochets, hits four people and ends up in Liam Martin's arms. Like if you need an over or you need a team to score, you have to punt for 100 years for something like that to go in your favor. But of course that was a try as well for the Panthers. And then in the second half, we just didn't have enough points to play with for the under to have a chance. And I was still disappointed with Melbourne's tackling. I felt like they couldn't stick tackles. And I still think Penrith's final try, which might've been Lindsay Smith, was pretty fluky too, because Tungo, the man I'm glad you brought up, because he had a whale of a game, but he was basically being tackled and shanked a kick and it just like flukily bounced into Smith's arm. So everything you'd possibly want if you wanted points, which I didn't. And for Melbourne to be up 14-0 and give up five straight Penrith tries, so it could have been six, is so disappointing and so uncharacteristic when Melbourne were at home. And this is a Penrith side without Nathan Cleary. It's not like they've been blowing out everybody else. I think they only had, 20 against Newcastle when they were at home, only about 20 against the Dragons, right? So this was out of the blue, just like Penrith turning it on, flexing their muscles. Worst possible time for me. Not good for, obviously, for Melbourne because they had no answer for this. So it goes back to when we were just starting to sing Melbourne's praises and saying they look like a true top four side. Now we second guess that. Whereas for Penrith, we just think, and I said this on Wednesday too, like they lose star players every year and they're still the benchmark in the competition.
Yeah, for what it's worth for the Storm, they've got a bye next round. And I would hate to see who's playing them on the other side of that in round 20 because it's the Roosters at the SCG. I feel like they are going to respond in a really, really dominant fashion here. While you were talking, I had a look at their average missed tackles this year. It's 34.8, higher than what they usually miss. It's actually equal third worst in the competition with the Titans, which is, you know, you look at the Titans and you look at the Storm, you certainly don't put those sort of teams in the same category. And that's an area that the Storm, whilst they, I think they're still in the top four, they're really going to have to tidy that up. It's a little bit uncharacteristic to what we've seen in the past. But I mentioned the Titans there, so let's jump into that game.
Just one more thing about Melbourne, because it was at Marvel, I think over 25,000 people, which they said was like one of Melbourne's biggest home crowds in over a decade. So all the more disappointing to fall away and concede, you know, try after try after try in that fashion.
Only 25,000. I feel like... I guess it is AFL Heartland, isn't it? But Raiders v Titans at GIO Stadium. This one had 11,600. I was one of them. My MVP was Joseph Tarpin in this one. He had 44 tackles for zero missed and 150 meters. For me, in this game, I mean, you talk about attention to detail in footy, and Titans just didn't have that at all, particularly to start the game. A lot of errors, a lot of really avoidable mistakes, which put us under pressure early and zapped our gas tank with all the defense we were forced to undergo. Really disappointing, none more so than the result. And I can't help but feel when I watch this game that we kind of let it slip away. We could have won this. We should have won this, I feel. Certainly my prediction of 13-plus was never on. I'm happy to come out and say I got that absolutely wrong. And in the same breath, I said I don't think the Raiders will win here with another close one. And, of course, they win with another close one. So really off the mark with this game there. Maybe too much optimism on my behalf. But even after that loss, we still have a better points differential than the Raiders. We've scored more and we've conceded less. They have played one less game than us, but they would need to win that game by like 36 points to make that points differential go the other way. But they're in fifth, we're in 10th now. So I stand by my comments earlier this year, Winnie. As a Titans fan, I still think we're a talented football team. Just don't think we're a good football team just yet. We've got some really brilliant moments in us. And it's kind of just waiting as fans to get that 80-minute performance. But yeah, in the end, Raiders were just a little bit too good for us. And credit to the Raiders, they got the job done. How do you see this one, though?
Well, I respect that you're giving the credit to the victors rather than, you know, straight away going to the decisions in this game. But I wouldn't blame you. You know, you predicted Titans 13 plus. Well, we all saw Dave Fifita score. We all know that was a try before halftime. So there's 6 points. And then you had the bizarre Tomoko try. That's a 90-meter return, 100-meter return off, you know, a ruling where they've said the Titans took their advantage, basically a 12-point swing because AKP, does anyone call him that for short? AKP, yep. Unable to plant the ball there. Controversial, right? So if you call that a 12-point swing and then you say they got robbed 6 in another spot, that's 18 points that the margin got changed by and they lost by 4. So should they have won by 14? I won't go that far, but they absolutely could have won. You know, and saying that these are things you can't always control. And although people are commenting that agree, you know, the calls didn't go the Titans' way, the game was still there to be won, you know, despite that. Mm-hmm. And so that's where lapses and errors, you know, opportune times are the difference, because I thought the Titans could have mounted that comeback in the second half. They seemed to have the running. And the Raiders just, you know, it doesn't matter that they'd scored less than you and conceded more than you, because they scored more and conceded less than you in this game. And they have had a habit of doing that, of winning all these narrow margin games. And it is all going to add up, and it's going to, you know, see them probably nestled into the top eight, where a different year they could be the Newcastle Knights or something, you know, where sides that just can't seem to pull it out. But you do have to give credit to teams for their resilience, whether they have to hold on to a lead. And this one was a bit of a crazy finish too, because the Raiders appeared to have iced the game, kick a penalty goal to go up 10 points, and then you regain the kickoff and score with a minute left and give them a little fright. But yeah, as James Graham says, play the whistle. I mean, I'll give you the final say on a couple of those calls. I think I've said it before, but this is just what I believe. It's a gray area when a team knocks on and the other team gets the ball, of what is advantage and when is kind of advantage over. And we don't want to become rugby union where advantage seems to go for 15 minutes, right? But I really like the Super League gimmick. I don't watch Super League regularly, so I don't know if I still have that rule, the free play. So it's just no gray area. You know that if you get the ball off an opponent error, it's a free play. No matter what happens at the end of that play, you can come back to that mistake if you didn't get a positive outcome. I think we'd see some really exciting moments and we'd see some really audacious footy, which is entertaining. And isn't that the purpose at the end of the day? Whereas it happened again today at a really crucial moment in the Roosters-Manly game, where Manly dropped the ball. It's fallen straight to the feet of Sandon Smith. He's just kicked it ahead. And then he couldn't get a bounce that allowed him to pick it up again. And Manly dived on it. And I thought they'll go back because he didn't get advantage. And the ref said, well, you had two kicks at it. You took your advantage. Like, I thought that was pretty harsh, pretty crucial. And it's another team that lost the game by a narrow margin. So that's my two cents in terms of how those are ruled, because it's bloody harsh. If people didn't see it, they don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Raiders knock on. Titans catch the ball. They're like 10 meters out from the try line. Throw it straight to the winger. Winger's got half a chance in the corner. Khan Pereira dives for the corner. He doesn't quite get it. He spills it in the in goal, but it doesn't go dead. Everybody stops on the Titans. Rapana just grabs it, runs it 10 meters out, passes to Tomoko, and Tomoko then takes it 90 meters and scores under the post, because the Titans assumed it would be called back, and the ref had said, no, you had your advantage because you had a chance. I think you can debate it either way. I just wonder if it'd be better if we took the debate out of it, make it a more black and white rule.
Yeah, well, the debate never used to be, and it was if you go 10 metres, then that was your advantage taken. Of course, now they've changed that rule to it's completely referee's interpretation. I think the issue with that one might be Alofeanu Khan Pereira knocked the ball on in goal, which is a 7-tackle, 20-metre restart. You can't play on from a knock-on in goal. You always must go out to the 20, I believe. If I've got that wrong, please let me know. But that's my understanding of how that rule is now. Any knock-on in goal from the team attacking, the other team takes it to the 20 and has a seven tackle set. but he picked up the ball and played on off that, which I think the Titans players were a bit confused as well, but James is what he says absolutely correctly. Just play to the whistle. Just make the tackle just in case. You never know, right? And I can say every single Titans fan I was sitting with, there was about 50 of us in the front line, which is really good for us. It's probably laughable for other teams, but that's really good for the Titans. It was awesome. We were louder than the Raiders fans. I don't know if you guys could hear our chant, but at the ground, we were certainly way louder than them. And there was only 50 of us. But yeah, everyone in that section felt we were robbed. I just think it was unfortunate. It was upsetting we didn't get some calls, but I want us to get to a stage where as a footy team, you just put that on the back burner and just kick on with the job and just win the momentum back, earn the momentum back, rather than relying on a referee's decision to get that for you. The real positive in this one, though, you mentioned it was Tino's try at the end, which kept us alive. He's now scored a try late in the Rabbitohs game, the Tigers game, and the Raiders game. So our last three games he's played in, he's been right around at the end, still trying his heart out for the full 80 minutes. And then off the field, he was the last one there, still signing autographs and taking photos. So really great leader for our club. Really proud of Tino. And yeah, just disappointed.
We'll give you one more positive. I appreciate your pragmatic, response to the game. One more positive is we always talk about players who are underperforming when they make $1 million a year. Well, Fifita's playing like a player deserving $1 million a year. He's dominating games. He absolutely would have been man of the match if you could have been on the right side of the ledger. So look, that's exciting to watch. It's a shame. Sometimes you feel like you waste these great individual performances when your team is unable to get the win, but he was a threat every time he touched the ball.
Yeah, because Fifita would have got that try, which would have got us in the threat. He would have had two tries, try assists, 10 tackle breaks. He was on fire, really happy with Fafita's form. Now, this next game, if there's any Tigers fans watching, I'm sure you wish we could skip it. We can't. We've got to talk about it briefly, if anything. Cowboys win 74-0. Their previous highest score was against the Tigers when they scored 64. It's now 74 against the Tigers. My MVP was Scott Drinkwater. 5 try assists, 2 tries himself. That is the most involvements I've ever seen of tries ever since I've watched footy my whole life. 7 try involvements is just simply unheard of. But, you know, from a review perspective and looking at this angle from both games, I really can't add too much. The Cowboys wanted revenge badly. They got revenge badly. So full credit to them. Tigers now, in my opinion, are a worse team than they were under Michael Maguire. I can't help but feel if Michael Maguire was still there, they probably have won 1 or 2 more games this year, to be absolutely honest. And the scary thing for the Tigers is their next coach, Benji Marshall, club legend, completely get it, assistant coach this year, building experience, completely get it. He has 0 experience as a head coach. Like, legitimately, not even the local under-12s team. He's not even been a head coach at park footy level. And you're telling me that an assistant coach that is producing results like this is suddenly going to become the head coach, have more responsibility, and it's going to turn around. In the same way that I'm too optimistic for the Titans, maybe I'm being too pessimistic here for the Tigers, but that does not look good to me. So I really wish the Tigers all the best for the future, but I think they're in for this for at least the next 3 years. Meanwhile, the Cowboys moved to 9th. And the one thing I want to talk about this game was Gus Gould on Channel 9, Winnie. He made a call a few weeks ago. That he said, I believe the Cowboys could make finals, or they could make the top 4. It was something like that. And then he started claiming it on one of the review shows on After the Footy, saying, oh, I said it. It's like, well, no, you said they could. You've got to come out like I did with the Titans 13-plus call. Have some backbone. Make the call. And if you get it wrong, just say, I got it wrong. It's not that deep. It's just footy, right? But when you say, oh, they could, you know what I mean? Tigers could win the premiership this year. You know what I mean? You can't say on both sides of the coin in my mind. But yeah, I mean, your thoughts on this absolute blowout of a game and a history game as well.
Well, first on Gus, I do feel like when we make a prediction, you know, if we really believe it, then we'll back it with, you know, it's not a hot take. We'll back it with cold cash. And I like Gus in some ways. Like, he's a character. I've got no doubt about his knowledge game. But he can be a bit of an after-timer. And I feel like he almost hoodwinks those around him, because there'll be that many games where he's commentating and a team will make a comeback, you know, they're down 18 and they come back. And Gus will say something like, I knew this team was about to come back. I could tell by the body language that they were about to come back. And it's like, well, if you could tell that, that would have been fascinating to hear you say that 3 tries ago, not tell me how you knew it was going to happen once it's happened. Mm. I know before Origin 1, he said, New South Wales must win this game. There is no way they can win game 2. They will not win game 2 in Queensland. But then once they lost the game, it wasn't series over. He was saying, here's all the reasons why New South Wales can win game 2 in Queensland. But then when they lost, it was, I said from the start, New South Wales could not win game two in Queensland. So whatever. Anyway, we're all doing our best out here, but we'd certainly hold our predictions, you know, try and make them clear for everyone to see. And with a record that you can read in our show description, and it's not too flattering at the moment, although got this one right. Best bet on the game, Cowboys to win both halves. Did they win both halves?
It was a close one. I'm not too sure.
42-0 in the first half. So we won the first half. Yep, 42 points. And the second by only 32 points. So we didn't have to sweat too much. Neither did we for the mixed matchup, which, you know, is kind of cool that 6 weeks ago, the Tigers were the team we needed points from in the mixed matchup. And they put 66 on the Cowboys. And then we reversed it this week and took the Cowboys out to outscore Brisbane in the later game. And you didn't even need to watch that one to know that you'd won. In fact, Top Sport already paid it out. So look, that was kind of a double win for us. This was the high mark of the weekend. And I go back to, you can call it a bad tip. Of course, when it loses, it's not, you know, it's a bad tip for sure. And people let me know about it. But I can live with an under call on Friday night that just didn't go our way in that type of game with how it unfolded. You know that that's a great bet, what we had on the Cowboys. And we'll get to my bet on the Dolphins because I want to respond to someone else's comment about the way we executed that, because I like the Dolphins and they covered the game, and yet my best bet is a loser there, although the same game of one. And one of the main reasons to be on the Cowboys here was that, you know, revenge factor, as silly as that sounds, because I do believe some people out there still think like, oh, they're professional players. They play their best every week. It's not like some games they want it more than others. It's not like some games they're a bit more tired or like it shouldn't matter. It does matter. And this is like a perfect example of like the spot that the Cowboys were in 6 weeks ago was not great when we were on the Tigers for a best bet. And then, you know, a month and a half later, look at how the Cowboys turned the tables. They definitely, you know, took it personally, some of the gestures in this game. Because I think the first 15, 20 minutes, there wasn't a try. But then the Cowboys went bang, bang, bang. And it was 18-0 after, you know, 25 minutes or something. And the Cowboys already knew it was game over. Tigers are lacking any sort of resolve or resilience and offered basically no resistance for the rest of the game. And the record books were all under great threat. And the Cowboys were able to patch up their points differential, you know, that obviously got hurt a few weeks ago. And the Cowboys, which is important, you know, to bolster your plus minus. You made a point there about Benji. I don't feel like we can hang a result like this on Benji. When they won 6 weeks ago, it didn't mean, oh, the future's, you know, assured and Benji's the answer. Like, he's the assistant coach. There's only so much he can do. He's not going to be the head coach for another 18 months. The roster, I think, will improve between now and then because I do think they've got some young talent that's shown and they've still got the ability to recruit. And I think it's more a case of maybe Sheen's. How can he steer the ship in the meantime? I know you're saying Benji doesn't have experience, but he will learn a lot. And the Tigers have to learn from moments like this because simply everyone knows it's just not good enough, that type of result, especially coming in off a bye, where you can't even claim that you're too beat up or too fatigued because, like, you've had 2 weeks to prepare for that game. It's pretty pathetic. And the crazy part is it wasn't, I would argue, that was the biggest margin, it wasn't the worst performance of the weekend by a team.
That's a bold call, but, I mean, yeah, you could be right, that's for sure. I just think for Benji, it goes back to the experience. Like, you think Cameron Serrato was an assistant coach at the Panthers with so much success, really struggling as a head coach with a roster probably similar, you might say, to the Tigers. Maybe the Tigers is a bit stronger. But I guess the other side of that coin is Webster's having some good success with the Warriors. So it is a prediction at the end of the day. But in the words of Gus Gould, I just want to say, when I tipped the Cowboys earlier this year against the Tigers and they got smashed with 66 points, I actually saw this performance coming. It just came at the wrong round. So
that's why I got that tip early. You know, a week ago you asked me, should Drinkwater play for New South Wales? So that was somewhat prophetic because he had just about the best individual performance you can have. Then again, you always have to caveat that with that it was against basically traffic cones, but he could not have done much more. And I wonder if Drinkwater could step in and play six for New South Wales. Let us know what you guys think. Maybe he just needs to keep these performances going and then be a serious option in 1 year's time. And just one other point, because you brought it up on Wednesday, that going into this game, the Cowboys had the most missed tackles in the comp and the Tigers the least. How crazy when you end up with a scoreline like that.
It just shows that sometimes you can read into the stats all you want, and it just doesn't matter. Fingers crossed for Drinky that quad strain's not too bad, and he is still in consideration for the Blues. I think he really deserves it. Our next game was one we had a best bet on. It was the Broncos v. Dolphins at the Gabba. The Broncos got up 24-16. Went with Payne Haas for my MVP. He had 200-plus metres and did not miss a single tackle. Selwyn Cobbo also a fantastic option with that hat-trick. I look at this game, and I'm none wiser to the question, how much have the Dolphins improved this year? Because I just think it's tough to get a read. When they versus the Broncos earlier this year, they just lost in that game as well. But they had genuine injuries and players out during that game. This time the Broncos did. And the Broncos are probably a better side now as well. I think they've improved as the year's gone on. So none the wiser to that question. Another game for the Dolphins, though, where I will say there's positive signs here. If you add Flegler, Farnworth, and Avarillo to that side, they might have beaten the Broncos in this game. And they will have those three players there next year. But for the Broncos, I just go back to last week. All the criticism they got for losing to my Titans, all the people thinking that, you know, this could be where their season starts to fall off. And it could have been. I was one that certainly floated the possibility to respond with a great win like this. And at the end of the day, they still have more wins than any other team in this competition. They've got 12, Panthers have 11, Panthers above them because of buys. But you've got to respect that absolutely for the Broncos. But yeah, over to you for your thoughts on this game and in response to the best bet information we have.
Yes, because, well, first, let me go back to the genesis of that best bet. I mean, how I find any best bet is, first of all, I'm kind of keyed in on one side that I think might be underrated or an opponent that might be overrated, but where we have an edge, and I've got to like them with the line. And the line in this game was Brisbane -8.5, and I like the Dolphins. So then it's like, what's the best way to execute? It's not always necessarily just take the line. You know, it could be a team total. It could be a derivative, like a halftime line. And I often do like that with underdogs because you protect yourself from getting blown out late. And you hate it when you get an underdog that's in the game and anybody could win for the first 60 or 70. And then those late couple of tries crush it. And in the end, Brisbane did get a late couple of tries, but didn't cover the line. About an hour before we went live, the line went up to 10.5 on Toppy, and it was because of the news that Hammer was shifting to center, which for me I didn't really think would be a downgrade. I didn't love the move myself, but I felt like Wayne would be doing it for a reason. And so I'm that close, I'm going 10.5. Well, and actually the other bet that I was tossing up that I was going to take rather than the 8.5 was either team 1-12, because I thought it's very unlikely that Brisbane will win this 13+. So I can kind of get two extra points with the Dolphins, but I won't take a team, either team 1-12, if the line is already 10.5, because I feel like you're only gaining that 2 points and crazy upsets can happen. We have seen that happen before. So then I went back to, all right, I'll take the plus 10.5, but it was $1.80, whereas the 5.5 was $1.90. So you know the rest. So I went the first up line with the Dolphins and I'm still hurting because score the first try, but it gets taken away by the bunker. Even then, you're still covering the line, but you mentioned that the Dolphins might have won if they had Herbie Farnworth. Well, if you take his 2 tries and put them on the Dolphins, they would have, because Farnworth scores a first half double. It really does, you know, annoy me when they didn't have an overlap either side, but he just got on the outside of Tavare. And, you know, he's not the quickest player, although I've seen him chase down some guys in Queensland Cup, but what he has got as an asset is strength, not strong enough, you know, couldn't stop Herbie or hold him up on either occasion. In fact, the second one, even Izako jammed in and two of them bounced off. And, you know, I feel like a lot of games this year where you need a team to score, there's, you know, you see desperate tackling on the try line time and time again, players held up over the line. The Dolphins couldn't tackle effectively enough in that first half, come back and still cover the full game line. In fact, led game with 15 to go. And to celebrate Brisbane, this was another game a little bit like the Newcastle one, where they had to dig deep to find a way to win. And when there was no Reece Walsh to pull it out of the fire for them, and we know they're missing, you know, Flegler as well and Ricky, it was impressive. And it was kind of a moment of brilliance. And you have to just tip your cap to someone like Cobbo that Dolphins had him covered. Broncos were throwing it around on final tackle. And for Cobbo to come up with an individual play, you know, chip and chase for himself, regather and score the winning try. And he actually adds another one that's a clincher later. you know, moments like that are special, and in front of a big crowd at the Gabba. It was a little unfamiliar surroundings for both sides, but it's, you know, a much-needed win for Brisbane and respectable for the Dolphins, and it annoys me. And I think I want to respond to Harry Potter there. He asked, where do the mixed matchups and same gamers get posts? So, I mean, we'll always share the mixed matchup every Wednesday, and we always talk about the same gamer will be posted on our social media on Friday. And if you're in the Tripod Facebook group, you're always going to see that stuff, as well as the Instagram page, Facebook page, same as your Facebook page, Clarky. You post the same gamers and all of these tips. And so, look, I take the point that if I just took the full game line, I would have won. And boy, it stings, trust me. I go to bed, you know, thinking about these things. But if you look back at the best bets this year, I think that has probably been the case multiple times where I've taken a first half line and maybe gotten too cute and the full game line ended up winning. So it does hurt. You always got to review the way that you're executing your opinion on these. And so, it's frustrating as anything. And it's always something that I'm factoring in on a Wednesday to try and get the best possible way to pull off a best bet win. But it's been kind of cruel recently because, you know, I feel like if you pick the right team to cover the full game, in all likelihood, they will cover the first half. But it has not gone our way. And so even though the game kind of played out the way I saw it, it ends up being a loss. Although I did say that the Dolphins led in 48 points, and if they just focus on their tackling, they can halve that. And Brisbane did, in fact, score 24, which, as we said before, was 50 less than what they would have needed to beat the mixed matchups. That's the only positive, but it didn't feel like a positive because it had already been paid out.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just Murphy's Law, though. Like, you back it one way and the other one comes in. Like, it's always easy to, you know, look in hindsight and think, oh, I wish I did this. But at the time, you know, you're always acting off the best information you've gotten. And you know, a 9-year track winning record as well, might I add in there. Hammett to center was very interesting because I thought he didn't have his best game, but I thought Nick Arima played really well. And one of Herbie's tries that you referenced, Tafade didn't quite wrap him up, but he kind of held him up for long enough where you were just waiting, where's the fullback, where's the fullback?
Yes.
And Nick Arima just got there a little bit too late, where I feel like Hammer probably would have got there with his speed. I
had that same thought as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, what the Dolphins do from here. And for the Broncos, they're really going to be tested because I believe Payne Haas has a minor hamstring injury. Even the most minor hamstring strains throughout NRL history, recent history is 2 to 4 weeks. So he likely won't play for the Blues, and the Broncos will likely be without Flegler, Ricky, and Haas, which is, whew, Paddy Carrigan's going to be making 100 tackles in the middle with that there. Next game was another absolute blowout. It was entertaining despite the score, as weird as that sounds. It was entertaining because the whole time I was thinking, can they beat the Cowboys? And I was just hoping they'd hit 70 there. My MVP was Bradman Best. He had 3 tries, 2 try assists. Again, from a, you know, looking at it from both sides of the coin, not too much to review here. I expected a close game. A little bit embarrassing, but my wife actually asked me before. She said, how would you play this game? And I said, I'd play Bulldogs +8.5, and I'd throw in a try score. I'd probably go Addo Carr. So he has a great try scoring record at a core, 21 tries from his last 19 games, and I expected a close one. So I was thinking, if you get the Bulldogs with more than a converted try, you know, it could be jammed for money there. In the end, thank God that bet never went on, because that would have been a horrible one. But yeah, I am shocked at this scoreline. I expected a close one. The Bulldogs never look interested. They weren't. Did they get off the bus? They just weren't into this game at all. I can't believe the stat here: 15 errors and 66 missed tackles. That is the most missed tackles I've seen in, I would say, the last 3 or 4 years. I think I remember another game a while ago when I was covering that was 60 plus, maybe not 66, but I mean, every single missed tackle there was technically a point if you look at it that way, which is just wild. Another side though, Winnie, that the Bulldogs are worse now than they were under Mick Potter last year. They've gone backwards despite upgrading their coach and getting a better roster. So I don't know what's happening there. If other teams are getting better, is the salary cap not working? I don't know, but it feels like these sides that are getting blown out are in worse positions than they were the previous year. For the Knights, I'm really interested to see how they go from here. This is an amazing win for them. They'll have a lot of confidence, and I'm interested to see how that confidence rolls into the back end of their season, because when they play, not even like this, but just when they play good, they can match it with some of the best teams, such as Penrith, where they only just lost. So really excited for the Knights and where they go from here. Not too sure for the Doggies. What did you get watching this one?
I can't believe your missus asked you which way would you play this, like from a punting perspective. And
yeah, she loves it.
Is it jam for money or money for jam? I guess if you had money on the dogs in this one, you get jammed, that's for sure. And I was with you in terms of really not seeing this coming. And this is why I think this was by far, I can't say by far actually, because that'd be disrespectful to the Tigers, but this was the worst performance of the weekend, all things considered, because the Tigers at least had to get on a plane and fly to North Queensland and play a side that they, that, you know, visibly hated them and wanted to inflict pain. The Bulldogs were at home. The Bulldogs were also off a bye, like the Tigers. The Bulldogs had some important players coming back in. The Knights have not been going gangbusters recent weeks like the Cowboys have. And that's why I actually lean to the Dogs. I mean, you can go back and, you know, like Gus Gould might not invite people to go back and bring up his freezing cold takes. But I said on Wednesday, if this line's 4.5, I'm playing the Dogs. So, you know, thank goodness it wasn't, because how much would I be copping it if I'd been on the Bulldogs? But that's how I kind of saw this game. So a few minutes in, you could see that that was a totally wrong take and only one team turned up, and the missed tackling wasn't bad enough. You're right. The errors were diabolical. Like the Dogs, you know, when you're really under the pump, you've got to focus so hard on, you know, being effective with the footy and completing sets. And that, the Dogs just look so nonchalant, the amount of errors, where players seem like they wouldn't even bend over to catch the ball, or just these, you know, no-look flicks and stuff out of a tackle. And every single one went to ground, and then, or you know, 13 players all dropping their heads, and the Knights just having a ball out there. You know, I have a question. Did we see the New South Wales Blues left centre in this game? You know, they go Crichton on the right centre. You know, Campbell Graham's not available, Luttrell. So did we see, going into the game, we thought that would be Matt Burton. You know, I know one game doesn't get you in, but it probably should be Bradman Best on form. Certainly if you watched the game this afternoon and someone told you the Blues have got to pick a center from that game, was it probably another good one for everyone that loves crazy same game multis with a lot of try scorers? Although I can't help but think yet again, everyone but the right winger got in on it. Am I right in suggesting Dom Young probably just about the most likely Knight? Actually, I don't know if Ponga scored. He had a hand.
He had three
in a lot
tries, this, but he didn't score. But Dom Young leads the NRL in 16.
And I know people in our group who are on Dom Young for like leading try scorer in the comp, and you got to be filthy that a game like today doesn't get in on the action. But just about everybody else did. Obviously, you know, Hastings had a double, didn't he? Crossland had a double. Bradman Best three. So I guess some of these guys got greedy and took multiples. And that's why not every leg might have ticked off for some people. Same gamers. Look, so I'm not going to say too much. Like, hey, I told everyone the Knights are capable of this because I didn't pick it this week. And yeah, it's great. It's 2 points on the competition ladder. It helps your points differential. But I go back to the fact that they could have just found a try here or there in some tight games. They could be way higher on the ladder. They weren't able to do it under pressure. It's easy to look good against an opponent that's basically given up. And I would be quite concerned if I'm a Bulldogs fan, looking at Serraldo in the box. You really have to question, like, my only explanation is that they went into the bye and they're already starting to think about next year and, dare I say, you know, Bali trips, since we're on the topic of Bradman Best. And the key focus was not, you know, this game in front of their home fans, because you said, did they get off the bus? Did anyone tell them their bye week was over?
And that's the thing. When you lose by 66 points, coaches don't, from my experience and from what I've seen covering the game, coaches don't usually go back in and straight away focus on what did we do tactically wrong. You kind of just throw it out the window and you narrow in on the mentality. Why the hell were we not all there in the head? Because the Bulldogs, if this game was replayed right now, both teams rock back up to the stadium and play this game right now, the Bulldogs, I'll probably take them to lose again, but I'm going to take them to lose by like 10. Because they just have that chance to mentally reset and go at it again. And that's what I think the coaches do, rather than, you know, narrowing in on all 66 missed tackles. So, yeah, I think the Bulldogs need to forget about this as quick as possible and come together as a group. And the Knights need to really take the ball and run with it now. They've got some solid momentum.
Comment there by James Graham that Adam O'Brien is an absolute genius. And there were questions. Like, I saw the statement thrown around this week. If the Knights lose this week, is that AOB's job? And it, you know, if they don't finish the year strong, I think they're looking for a replacement, because he hasn't been extended yet, right? So you could say that the performances in the near future dictates, you know, whether the team still wants him to be the coach. That's going to be shown. I guess I just want to be careful of not reading too much into, oh, this proves everything about the Knights, when I know how putrid the Dogs were. And I'm sorry, like, Dogs fans, but I mean, they came off a bye, and the previous 2 weeks they got pumped by Cronulla and pumped by Parra. So in those games, you could make excuses for them. Oh, a few guys were out here or there. They played some hot sides or whatever. Like, you're running out of excuses fast now when you look at a game like today. So it was pretty shocking to get blown away that by that type of magnitude.
Spot on. And the other thing, well, I guess the final thing was the Cowboys were -14.5 favorites. Bulldogs were slight on the Dogs at +2.5. So, yeah, you probably are right in your assessment that they were the worst team this week, despite the huge score on the Tigers. My rundown post will be very interesting trying to split one of them, that's for sure. But final game of the round, we just watched it. It was the Sea Eagles v Roosters. Manly winning a really tight one, 18-16. A really tight game here. I thought the difference for both sides was the halfbacks. Now, I know Sandon Smith is the halfback for the Roosters, but we would, I think most people would agree Luke Keary is still their chief playmaker. DC was brilliant. He, besides his, you know, individual brilliance, Manly kind of didn't really have too much else in attack here. It was really DC's brilliance that got them over the line, in my opinion, particularly that intercept on the stroke of halftime. Whereas for Luke Keary, it's getting to a stage now where we've spoken about it a few times on the show. The Roosters have shown, if you're not getting results as their main playmaker, you go. Mitchell Pearce went after winning premierships at the club. Kyle Flanagan went in his first year of a 3-year deal. They can be ruthless like that. And so if the Roosters are to miss the eight this year, I really do wonder, does Luke Keary finish there in 2024? My gut feeling would say no. I think they'd go to the market. They'd throw everything at Ben Hunt. They'd find, or they'd do something. The Roosters are that sort of team where they just demand his success. They're not getting it at the moment. But another game in the Roosters season where even if they won, I'm sitting here like, I'm not impressed. You guys aren't where you should be at all. So I hate to be critical of Roosters again, but they just didn't quite tick enough, you know, boxes on my list this week. And Manly themselves, I would say a lot of their fifth tackle options were pretty poor. Just kicking to the same corner, kicking to Daniel Tupou over and over. Like, hello, he's so consistent, right? Try something else. But in the end, it was DCU's individual brilliance that got them the win here. Tight contest, battle of the birds, Manly get up and keep their season alive, you'd say. It's getting to that point, isn't it, Winnie? Where you just got to win, right?
Yeah, because I thought that losing today could be a death sentence for either side. And for the Roosters, that's 2 weeks in a row, Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, they lost 18-16, right? Identical scorelines. So you can change one moment in the game against the Raiders and maybe they could have won that. I don't think they deserve to, but it was that close. And again, today, but close, but yet so far, because now I think the Roosters may be too far to climb. We said on Wednesday, nobody in the comments really had the Roosters in the eight even before this round, and then you can't win this game. Now, I will say before kickoff, in fact, during the week, pretty brutally unlucky, the reports that Billy Smith and Joe Swalihi, who was meant to be returning from that knee raise suspension, had a head clash at training and both got basically Cat 1 concussions and out for 11 days. So they lose two starting players in a moment. So this line actually extended to 5.5. So I did think that the Bird Gang, that is the Seagulls at home, should get up. But also I thought the difference could be DC, which it was the case. But I thought maybe a field goal. He had some decisive kicks for sure. But you're right, that's like a thief in the night to get that intercept on half time, where Manly were going to go, you know, in at the break down 4 points. That was pivotal. But even then, the Roosters had the lead. When was the winning try scored by Manly? It was only scored with like under 10 minutes to go, right? And it's Trbojevic with the winning try, but Ben Trbojevic, so an unlikely hero in some ways, but Manly just sticking at it and getting that late try. And then it was an exciting finish in a weekend where we had 5 blowouts. This game come down to the final, you know, set with the ball with the Roosters, and then they put a bomb up and Manly drops it, and there's just over 60 seconds left, so the Roosters get to pack a scrum with a full set, and they tried everything, they threw everything at Manly's line. Teddy's tackled, you know, 10 centimetres short of the try line. Again, you never fault Tedesco's work rate, but just you just can't quite break a game like he used to be able to. And even down to the final play, Sandon Smith, I thought, acquitted himself. Is that the right word? Applied himself pretty well. but comes up with a, you know, all or nothing kick that is diffused in the final play. Not that that sums up his performance. I just he came to mind. I actually thought he's done pretty well with his opportunity. And you get into the point now where the Roosters may have to start making decisions about what's best for the future rather than what's best for this season, because this season may be just about all but gone.
Spot on. Like, Luke Keary could be the better half right now, all things considered, but long term you've got to go to Sam Walker there, which then would lead to Luke Keary's potential exit from the club. And yeah, Teddy, 299 meters at the time the game finished. That'll probably tick over 300 once the stats people review it and give a bit more to him there. So you can't fault his effort at all. He was brilliant. But in the end, this one is just, it was a DCE masterclass, really, and got his side home in a tight victory there. It was great to see. But that's all we've got time for tonight, guys. That is our recap of round 18. Please don't forget, we'll be back on Wednesday live again at 6:30 p.m. to preview everything round 19. And then the following week, we'll have Origin previews, all that sort of stuff headed into the dead rubber. But there's never truly a dead rubber in Origin. We can't wait for all the footy coming up, guys, and we hope you can join us 6:30 Wednesday to preview it all. Thank you very much.
Have a good week, guys. Lego.